Well, hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. David Pearson, the head of threat research at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Awake Security. They are based in Santa Clara, California. David, thank you so much for your time on a Saturday afternoon with us, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we looked up your bio. In fact, for all of our guests, we kind of do like a good Google search and LinkedIn. You know, we look up your LinkedIn profile to see, you know, how long you've been in cybersecurity, and you've been spending pretty much your entire career in that realm. Can you tell us about your career and some of the highlights and some points you'd like to kind of showcase or elaborate on?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start a little bit before that, just to set the stage. I had the opportunity to get my first computer when I was about 6 years old, and kind of didn't grow up in a, you know, very big, well-off family or anything like that. And so I kind of really just got interested in exploring on my own, and over time, quickly discovered the internet and how different things worked. And one of the things that I always talk about is the first thing that I can remember is roughly around 13 years old, I did this, I started reading about spoofing emails back in the old days. And so I spoofed an email from Santa Claus at the North Pole because I was 13 to myself and thought that was the coolest thing ever. And since then, you know, I've gone on and had really good luck that timing and interest worked out, and ended up going into a really great undergraduate program that was focused on security. And while I was there, I got the opportunity to talk to some folks who were doing work at one of the national labs in the United States. And I applied for a couple of internships and got accepted to those. And so I even before I was full-time, I got this opportunity to join this center that they had for security professionals of all sorts of different areas, and really got a chance to dig in and explore a bunch of things. And that was really fantastic. And I found out a little bit later that they had this opportunity to push me, to push certain students along into a more complete program where they would, you know, take care of your master's degree as long as you went to a really top-tier school, and then jumped into to full-time work with them. And it was you know, a match made in heaven. It was exactly what I wanted. So I went and did grad school at a really great place, and spent a lot of time with a lot of smart students from all over the world, really. And from there, you know, really started into my career. Got to do some really, really neat stuff with the National Lab. I was extraordinarily happy with, you know, the mission and all of the different aspects. I did anything from network security all the way through analyzing source code and everything in between. And it was really a great experience to flesh out exactly what the things were. The way I describe my career is I keep figuring out what I don't like until I continue to optimize exactly for the thing that I like. And so as my career has gone on, I've continued to do that. And right around, I think I was at the labs for about 3 years, I figured out I'm really interested in this network security kind of stuff. And I had I'd played with the tool called Wireshark back before it was Wireshark, when it was still ethereal. Back in high school, even at this point, and I always really liked it, and I always fell back to it. But I really realized at that point that I was really good at that, and I also really enjoyed that, which I think is the perfect marriage of things. And so I then started looking for positions that would really allow me to express those tandem interests. And fortuitously, a recruiter at Awake had reached out to me roughly around the same time that I was about to start my job search for this kind of thing. And things just went, you know, perfectly there. It was a match made in heaven. It's a security product. It's related to the network. We do a lot of analysis. And I got to join the company at a time where there were not that many security experts, but rather a lot of people who were really distinguished, and they were hungry for this knowledge. So I came in with the opportunity to teach and also to learn. In this case, learn a lot about startup life and how all of that works and what the Silicon
Oh,
Valley
awesome.
area is like.
Okay. Do you have any certifications or any certs, as they say in the industry?
Yeah, so it's interesting, and I know a lot of people do take that route, but I don't actually have any certifications. It's
Really?
not that I don't
Wow, okay.
yeah, it's not that I don't find them useful, because I certainly do, but I've just always had this opportunity to dig into the problems that I wanted in a way where I felt like I got the information that I needed and didn't necessarily worry about the formality of a certification. So I took this, a lot of people skip some of the academics and focus on certifications, which is a great route, but I kind of flip-flopped, and with the opportunities that I had, I took more formal education and fewer of the certification.
Oh, wow, that's very interesting. Okay, well, how did you join Awake Security? I mean, is this a company that you've helped to create from scratch? Are you like a part owner, or if you can divulge that information, or are you like a partner with the company, or?
Right. So just back to the start of that, once I was at the labs, I kind of realized my calling, as I explained a little bit ago. And so I started looking at that, and timing worked out well with the recruiter at Awake and all of that. But the company itself, while I'm not a co-founder, I was one of the first 20 or so employees, and the beyond the security co-founder, I was the first other security-focused person in the company. So there are a lot of people who certainly had knowledge of security. They weren't green in that respect, but they weren't security professionals. So I got to come in that kind of a role, and of course, as many startups offer you the opportunity to have equity, that was one of the things that we have. So in that respect, yes, I'm an owner of the company in this sense of options and things like that. But yeah, it's been a really, really great time. And like I mentioned before, having the opportunity to share my interests and have people who are hungry for that information, with the goal of making themselves better and, of course, our product better, was just fantastic.
That sounds awesome. What is the culture like at Awake?
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite things. A lot of people tell you about the horror stories of Silicon Valley or startups in general, really, and how everything is pretty scary. And I had, full disclosure, I hadn't been a startup before Awake, so I was pretty nervous about that. Hearing about toxic cultures unreasonable demands, in the sense that they weren't healthy and so on and so forth. But once I got to Awake, I didn't find that. I found that things were extremely transparent. We had the opportunity to really collaborate, especially. Really, it's actually, even as the company's grown in size, we've still had the opportunity to collaborate and really work together across different groups of the company. So that opportunity to really share and to learn is fantastic. I feel like we do these regular brown bags, we call them. So we teach each other things about what we're doing. So my team, the threat research team, will talk about some of the research that we're doing, or some of the threats that we're finding in the field, or whatever. And then the folks who do user experience and UI will talk about their designs and some of the things that they're really excited about and how they're integrating them into our platform. And it's really neat. I really enjoy it. And there's a couple of other things I wanted to point out. So of course, at a startup, you don't really have a job description. It's you've got to do whatever you need to do. But I've really been happy with how people really step outside of their, specific title and get whatever needs to get done. It's been really, really refreshing. But the last thing I wanted to point out, so we have these these so specifically culture, we have these things called PIGs, personal interest groups. And so we get together people who are interested in different things. So we have a bicycling pig, we have running, we have our, like a restaurant pig where people will go out and get lunch or dinner together, and just whatever people are interested in. If there's enough, at one point we had a motorcycling pig, and so just really neat things that allow us to bond outside of the specific work environment.
Excellent. Now, how long has Wheat been in business?
Yeah, so we've been around, I think we're just under 5 years at this point, but as a company that's, actually actively trying to be recognized and produce a product for the world, it's been about 2 years at this point.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are some of the awards that Awake has won recently? I noticed some on the website.
Yeah, so we have a bunch that we've won, but the two that I wanted to talk about, one of course is focused on the technology. So we learned earlier this spring that we were chosen as a gold award winner by the Edison award body for best cybersecurity product, best new cybersecurity product. And so this is Edison, the namesake Thomas Edison. It was actually a really big deal. It was they really focus on, what are the innovative things that are actually going to transform an industry. And so it was fantastic to learn the news that we had won a gold award there. And from the other side of things, I just talked a bunch about culture, and I think this kind of points to the reality here. We actually, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, we officially were recognized as one of Inc. magazine's 2019 best workplaces. So it really does
Oh,
speak to,
congratulations.
yeah, thank you. So it really does speak to, putting real proof behind what I say.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Now, let's get down to the core of your business, the customers. Obviously, that's core to any business.
Yeah.
Who is your typical customer that you're trying to target? I mean, are your customers and potential customers, I should say, prospects like small to medium-sized businesses? Are they the large companies of Fortune 500 or a kind of mixed match of both?
Yeah, so we generally focus our efforts on industry, Fortune 500, et cetera. Although we do have different relationships with organizations that are maybe city utilities and things like that. So we do have these opportunities where we have medium-sized, I would say. We don't really necessarily focus on small, but medium and mostly on large industry.
Okay. It looks like, let's get into your product line now. What exactly is the NTA NDR?
Yeah, so NTA, just to quick give the what the acronym means, network traffic analysis, and then of course NDR is network detection and response. So Gartner, the research firm, they use NTA kind of to describe the market that takes network data, whether that's flow data, raw network PCAPs, et cetera, and uses that information to monitor north-south and often east-west communication. So things going between the internal and the external, and also internal to internal. And then take that information and alert on suspicious activity for whatever definition of alert you want to talk about. NDR, the detection and response. So we use this as a way for people who understand what EDR, endpoint detection and response, is to point out that we're an parallel on the network. We do many of the same things, but we're focused on network, and that gives us some really nice advantages that you can't get from being deployed as an agent.
Okay. Now, tell me more about your platform. How is it available? Is it on-prem, meaning it's located as a physical premise of the business, or is it in the cloud? Can it be deployed as a cloud in the IaaS or the SaaS platforms?
Yeah, so we provide just about anything at this point. We do on-prem as physical or virtual appliances. We do cloud deployments. We have a couple of different organizations that we work with there. And in terms of integration itself, we depending on whether it's on-prem or in the cloud, we just simply hook up to a SPAN or a tap and passively monitor traffic.
Okay. It looks like that the Awake platform can serve a number of audiences within a company. I mean, you've got tier one analysts, senior analysts, expert hunters, C-suite, compliance and audit teams. Can you please further elaborate on these and how do the different aspects of the system, how are they structured to support these various groups within a company?
Right. So one thing that you see this all over the news, and it's definitely a big factor, right? There's definitely a skills shortage gap. There's not enough people to handle the way things are built today, and so there's either the solutions are you either find more people and get more people trained, in which case that introduces some things, or you allow people to do more with the fewer number. And so we focus a lot of our efforts of our product on recognizing that we need to support these junior entry-level kinds of analysts and really help them to excel and to perform at a much higher level than what their experience might be. So we do that a bunch of different ways we do that, but we one of the things that we do is emphasize different types of, we call them entities, right? So you might have a device instead of an IP address, right? You can really start to think about things in the same way that you would if you were a human talking to another human about a network. You're not thinking about, oh, this IP and, oh gosh, I have to go talk to the NOC and figure out if that IP belonged to this device or that device because the SOC and the NOC don't talk and all these things. It's a little rhyme. But so we try to avoid making these users, or really at any level of the platform, but especially those who are earlier on in their careers, we try to keep them from having to do a lot of extra work, right? We try to actually give that information, that context directly in the platform. So it's all built in. We have another thing that we do. We have built a lot of detections that are automated and run continually, and they really start to form the basis of what an attack looked like and what exactly is going on with different devices. Again, because we're thinking at a higher level than just IP. And you can really start to string together how is this device behaving over time? Are there a whole bunch of different things that are happening within a short period of time? Is this device exhibiting behaviors across many days? Is it doing the same thing over and over again and nobody else is doing that, et cetera? And we already have a really, really strong position there, and we're continuing to develop much more, and we actually have a lot of work underway to just blow that out of the water in terms of where we're going and make it much, much better. We also have this repository of starting points for different kinds of searches. So you could imagine if you want to step back and think, oh, hey, I realized that Chrome had a vulnerability that's being actively exploited and you need to update. You can do a quick search in our UI where you can click on one of our pre-built things and say, I want to make sure that all the devices that have Chrome are at least on Chrome XYZ, where that's today's version. And so you can see, oh, actually, this device isn't. And different kinds of use cases there. But they're automatically, you click on them, you get results, you don't have to actually think. And one other, and one other thing there. So we've also built the platform to provide this really snazzy, simple search capability. So we realized that on average, as an analyst, you don't want to have to think. You don't want to have to think about how you do something. You don't want to think about what format do I need to put this query in or anything like that, right? You just want to get results. You want to search for the thing that you know you need and get the results. And so we have this capability, we call it a simple search. And you essentially, you start typing. If it's the name of a device that you know is on your network, or a domain name that you're interested in, or an IP address, whether internal or external, and we just automatically give you back the most relevant result right in the platform, and you don't have to think about what it is. You can just get that information. So it's kind of trying to make it the easy button for network security.
Oh wow, that sounds incredible.
Recently
you have been explaining, or your company really has started to explain your technology as security that can think. Now, when I hear this tagline or slogan, I kind of, you know, incorporate the visions of artificial intelligence and machine learning in there. Am I correct in this assumption, or can you elaborate on that further?
Yeah, so not quite. That you could interpret it that way, but I wanted to paint a picture for you and to kind of explain it through a story. So
okay.
A little bit cheesy, but imagine you could teleport, right? But not actually control where you're going. So it's like Russian roulette, but it's with teleportation. And you step out on the other side, and maybe you're standing in the middle of a field, right? A grassy field in the middle of nowhere. Now, you know, as you're getting there, right, your brain kicked in. You have no idea what's going on. Are there any obvious imminent threats to my safety? Is there a lion sprinting towards me? If so, you might immediately go into action and try to figure out what you're going to do about that. Either you're going to fight it, probably not the best idea, or you're going to fly. You're going to get out of there, figure out a way to hide. If there aren't any obvious threats, right, you start to gather context. So maybe can you figure out where you are, where possible threats are, where they could approach you, and things like that. And in the background, you know, your mind is constantly going, right? And you might imagine that you're quickly filtering out details that are all over the place but irrelevant. For example, how many blades of grass are there in the field? It doesn't matter. It's not interesting. It's not going to save you. It doesn't matter. And also, at the same time, you're also recognizing that other things are happening that are possibly relevant. So is there a noise that I'm hearing? Is it a nearby animal that's kind of rustling through the grass? Or is it the sound of a far-off stream? One of those is possibly really interesting, right? If that animal is there, is it a threat? And you know, as you start to think about these things, if you take a step back and you think about, all right, your brain is constantly going, right? It's constantly thinking, processing surroundings subconsciously to keep us safe and well. Now, our platform uses this analogy pretty completely. So we obviously detect the easy to identify threats, right? So if it's something that's easily known about, we've got it. But we also continuously gather context about the information and the environment that we're in, you know, new enterprise, et cetera, and we filter out the details that don't. You know, there's plenty of anomalies in the world, right? And in the example, going back to the story I was talking about, if you have this lone animal rustling through the grass, that's an anomaly, right? That constitutes an anomaly. We've never encountered it before, but we quickly analyze it and decide whether or not we should care. And that's exactly what our platform does too. Is it actually something that the analyst cares about, or is it just noise? And so we don't give everybody the anomalies in the network. We give them the meaningful things that are happening.
It sounds incredible. It sounds great. Now, how does Awake help with the Internet of Things, bring your own device, and other unmanaged devices? I know I'll ask you maybe more two more questions on IoT after you finish this one. But I know that BYOD is like one of the biggest cyber threats out there, especially for the corporate America, when employees use their own smartphones versus company issued wireless devices. Can you expand more on that, please?
Yeah. So the one thing that I wanted to start with, if you go back to when I was talking about NDR and EDR and how we can complement them, and there are certain things that we do much better. This is an example where EDR doesn't really have a good value proposition, right? You can't put an agent on something that you don't control. So as an NDR, you get this opportunity to see whatever is on the network, regardless of whether or not it's owned by the corporation, because it's using the corporation's resources. You can see it. And so the BYOD and other unmanaged devices, including IoT, these things are all visible. And so just to start off with, that's kind of how we do that. And that's how we would get that visibility. But we also remember I was talking about this concept of a device rather than an IP. We can figure out what this kind of device is. We can figure out if it's a mobile device. We can figure out if it's a laptop, if it's a phone, if it's, you know, an Amazon Echo, these kinds of different technologies. They all exhibit certain kinds of behavior that you can use to identify them. And so we've actually done research to figure out ways that we can identify the behavior of these different kinds of devices in the network. And so we're actually able to say, yes, this thing is technology X, rather than saying, well, it's a device and we know that it's there, but we're actually able to figure out more about that.
Okay. Can you expand a little bit more on the IoT? Because I think the IoT to me, David, I'll be honest with you, I've been in IT for 20 years, but I still find the whole concept to be very kind of scary. I don't want to have every device connected, you know. And a good illustration of this, about a month or two ago, I met with my financial advisor, and he's kind of one of those gadget geeks I term, and he has a smart car. It's kind of like a James Bond car. You might want to, you know, kind of coming out of that one show, I think, called I think Spy Who Loved Me. Seriously, it is just, I mean, he's got like three screens. He was able to get the car to, you know, back up with just a flip of a button. You know, it's just, it blew my mind apart. I mean, seriously, I like technology, but I'm not to the point where I want my car to be like that. And to me, it's just very scary to have all this interconnectedness. And to me, it's just more of an attack surface for the cyber attacker. And it's just another point of failure. I mean, what are your thoughts on IoT? I mean, has Awake really dealt a lot with IoT security? Because I know this is going to be this is a big topic this year, and it's going to really expand into next year. And a lot of people don't understand it. And I think the best or the crudest examples I can give are like the virtual personal assistants like Siri and Cortana. Those are IoT products. So can you just expand a little more about your views on IoT and maybe spell some myths on that, or what you plan to do with it?
Yeah. So first of all, of course, we identify IoT. That's something that we've built as a competency that we're rolling out. And it's a Pandora's box of all sorts of craziness. We've actually had examples where I was able to find somebody's Tesla being connected to one of the networks that we were analyzing. And so, you know, that was something that you could clearly see was a smart car in this case. And so if you think from a couple of different perspectives here. So first of all, just resource usage, right? It's if somebody compromises your network and installs something fun on one of those IoT devices, and maybe it's doing cryptocurrency mining because it can or whatever, you know, that's one thing and not great. But more so, imagine, and this is actually, there's been some stories of this happening, where you have the IoT device is actually the point that gets either compromised off network or on network. And from there, they use that as a pivot point to get farther into the network. And so the depending on how your network's set up, if you have this interconnectedness of the network that allows these IoT devices on them with other things, that can get really, really scary and really provide a great attack surface for adversaries who maybe they aren't able to compromise your traditional technology. And so it really does provide this different side of things that's quite scary. And, you know, you can take it beyond IoT. There's the operational technology and the ICS SCADA kind of stuff as well. We've seen examples of that also being compromised and doing all sorts of different things. And, you know, then it's also controlling production, in this case, equipment, right? That's so this interconnectedness of the Internet of Things beyond just consumer devices really is a huge broadening of attack surface. You know, if you read the news, you see how many different botnets exist because default credentials are used, and there's not a huge incentive for IoT consumer device companies to build security in, because people just want to buy that thing as cheap as they can. And it's going to be interesting. It's already become interesting, but it's going to continue to get more interesting.
Sure. Okay. Now, we're hearing stories now and, case studies of companies that are moving their entire IT infrastructure from an on-prem to a cloud solution. And we're also starting to hear that cyber attackers are now using this infrastructure, this cloud-based platform, to hide in plain sight. How does Awake help in this paradigm? What kind of security solutions do you offer to your customers?
Yeah, so first of all, the thing I wanted to point out here is, if you go back to our story where you have an anomaly detection, right? If you think that there, if you take the example and think about a field of gazelle, right? There's a herd of gazelle in the field, and you see there's a whole bunch of them. They're common, right? There's many, and you don't know what's going on, but maybe there's something going on in there that is interesting that you're worried about, but you don't know you're worried about it because, hey, that's just a big group of the same thing and nothing interesting. And stepping back, the cloud, AWS or Google or whatever thing that you really like, attackers really like to leverage that information and those platforms too. And these tools that just use anomaly detection or use that as their bread and butter detection technique, that doesn't really provide you much, if any, coverage in those kinds of situations. And it's becoming increasingly easy for attackers to leverage this kind of information and to blend in. And so we as Awake, offer different ways to think about this kind of technology. So there's a lot of different aspects of the way we characterize different devices and learn more information about different things in the system that allow us to recognize patterns, I guess you could say, of things that are more or less this common behavior, but they kind of stick out some way. And so we leverage that information, and that can take many forms, but we leverage that information to kind of identify the thing that looks exactly like everything else, but is just a little bit off. And so that's really been one of the ways that we can do this. And we also, we've made this strong effort to build this essentially a Turing complete programming language that we, under the hood, that's what it is, but we expose it as this very advanced query language. So we have the simple stuff that I talked about earlier, and then we have an intermediate level that is kind of like Wireshark. It's similar to Wireshark in that you can do queries like that, and that's the intermediate level that people who are familiar with Wireshark can figure this out. But then we have this other thing that allows people to absolutely build whatever they want and really be able to identify the threat that they care about, or to say, hey, I know that these things are happening and I'm looking for You could say it's an anomaly within that, or you could say something that's leveraging the infrastructure a little bit differently. And we have a lot of built-in things that allow you to start with that. And we also have a lot of automated detection techniques that will also start to find those things for you. And so we kind of approach it that way. We give you these automated detections that help you to find these things. We give you these capabilities that you can use to build together what exactly you want. And then we give, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk about it a little bit earlier, but our expert hunters, you know, the 1%, those people we give the keys to the kingdom to really build exactly what their organization needs to detect the unknown unknown.
Okay. Now, there is talk about, you know, and I kind of asked this in the previous question about machine learning and artificial intelligence. What's going to happen with that? I mean, I've written a few blogs on that, and there's both a good side and a bad side. What are your thoughts on that, being a threat researcher?
Yeah, so machine learning and AI, so they're great technologies, right? They're extraordinarily important in a wide variety of industries and reasons, but they're not silver bullets. They don't solve everything. And if you bring it back to security, for example, you know, security is this very open-ended thing. I mean, there's this concept of a side channel attack, right? You can think about, you can cover every single possible base that you can think of with respect to how the technology is supposed to work. But, oh, by the way, your encryption is leaking the bits of the transmission because of the processor speaking at a certain cadence and such. And so there are so many different ways that you can have these attacks that kind of fall outside the realm of what you thought was your scope. And so being able to identify those kinds of things it's really difficult to identify things with machine learning that you can't well bound. And security happens to be one of those really tricky things. So it definitely does support a lot of different things. And we do actually use a lot of machine learning in our product, but we don't really talk about it. We don't market our product as ML AI buzzword bingo. We actually focus on, here's the value that we provide, and you know, if people want to get into the details when we're you know, providing a proof of value, or we're talking about what we're building, then we can, you know, can go into these details about how exactly we provide those values. But we're, you know, not everything is solvable with ML.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think that these are going to be, this is really going to be at the forefront of cybersecurity? Do you think that a lot of companies are going to go ahead and at least use these for automation tools, especially in terms of threat hunting and pen testing, to kind of help these teams with the, you know, the repetitive tasks of doing these activities?
Yeah, so the way I look at machine learning and security is that it will help to take care of those, either those entire jobs or those entire tasks that are related to very simple, mundane things. And simple is a misleading word. By simple, I mean less complex than the more difficult things. So as time goes on and as we find ways to completely automate or close to completely automate different aspects of the system, I expect that you know, machine learning will continue to help get rid of those simple and mundane tasks, if you will. You know, so it allows the human, you know, the real outside of the box thinking being, to really focus on the difficult problems that we haven't yet figured out how to solve with ML. And I, you know, just spending my time in security and understanding what I do, I don't see machine learning or artificial intelligence taking my job anytime soon. I do expect that it will help to make everybody more capable, and it will help people to get to focus on, I would say, more the artistic side of security and really figuring out the really difficult problems rather than the mundane things.
Okay, sounds excellent. Now, what about secure sockets layer and the march towards, you know, cryptography and encryption? I mean, SSL has been around for like the longest time, and I don't know how far back it goes. I think even back when I was doing my MBA, I think in the late 90s during dot-com craze, I think that's when it came out, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
And along with ML and AI, I think we're now getting back into encryption and cryptography. I think people are starting to realize, hey, these are good tools. And you know, cryptography has been around since like the days of Julius Caesar. You know, he
yeah.
created the cipher and so forth. What kinds of issues are there, and what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so and from my perspective, so generally speaking, encryption is a good thing, right? We want people to be able to be private and to have communications that aren't viewable by governments or by other organizations unneeded, unnecessary ways. So just as a starting point, but also, you know, I recently looked at some of our bigger deployments, you know, our Fortune 500 types of clients, and just looking at the traffic breakdown, which is something that we can do pretty easily with our system, I was looking and seeing, depending on which deployment it was, between 50 and 70% of the traffic that goes between the internal and external, the north-south traffic, is already encrypted with something, usually TLS, TLS 1.2 or 1.3, but other encryption technologies as well. And so we're already there. We're certainly not at, you know, 100% encryption or anything like that, but the majority of traffic that's communicating to the internet is encrypted these days. And I was joking with some of my colleagues recently that I'm now more suspicious when the traffic isn't encrypted, because anybody, you know, who really spends time building an infrastructure is encrypting their stuff now, especially with the
right.
ubiquity of, you know, companies like Let's Encrypt and these free certificate providers that really, you know, take the barrier of entry down just about to zero. So it's, you know, this world, we're already living in it, and, you know, it'll continue to march and become more encrypted, but not everything is encryptable. If you think about in internal networks and stuff there, maybe not that it's not encryptable, but it's not worth it to encrypt. It's internal, and it's something that you would want to be able to troubleshoot if you were a network admin trying to figure out what's going on with your network and so on. And so in that respect, from the east-west kind of traffic, it seems like there's less of an impetus to really encrypt everything, which whether or not they do, that I'm not terribly worried. But we focus on things that are outside of, you know, we're not looking at signatures, and we're not looking at specific matches, and we're not worried about doing inline decryption, right? These aren't things in our vocabulary at Awake. We're not focused on those kinds of types of things for our analysis. We focus on trends and patterns and all these other things that you can figure out that are kind of encryption agnostic. You can do the same stuff on plain text data, but yeah. So we don't really view encryption as a big issue for us, but rather as an enabler to keep more people private when they're, you know, communicating with their bank or with their family, or et cetera.
Okay. Now, this just sparked another question in me. Sorry for all these extra questions. I'm writing my quarterly newsletter. Yeah, I write my company offers a quarterly infographic newsletter on cybersecurity meant for SMBs, small and medium-sized businesses. My newsletter this quarter is going to be about phishing. And one thing I want to ask you, do phishers or those people who launch phishing attacks, do they use SSL in their spoofed up websites as well too, in order to make it as convincing as possible, or do they tend to forget to leave out and not use SSL?
No, I definitely follow. I've actually seen a lot of pretty sophisticated stuff. I have this concept of minimum viable sophistication. So people being attackers in this case, will do whatever is minimum required to achieve, right, whatever the thing is. And most people kind of get a little bit more suspicious now if it's not encrypted. It's not to say that people won't also still be successful if there are HTTP communications in an email, because people might not be paying attention. But in reality, I've honestly seen a lot of pretty tricky stuff lately where, yeah, everything is HTTPS encrypted. And sometimes the way they do it, it's not even using something like Let's Encrypt, which is certainly not a giveaway or anything, but rather something that I'm more suspicious of just because of the barrier of entry being zero. So there's actually some pretty sophisticated stuff out there.
Okay. Now, let's go back to your company and your customers. Do you have any customer success stories or any case studies that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yes, I've got a few top of mind that I like to share here. So one was, so we have this concept, I talked about how we can identify devices, right, and why that gives us additional superpowers, if you will, right? So one thing that we can do on top of that is we can actually identify the similar devices in the network, right? So we can say, for example, let's just take mobile phones, right? Maybe there are 1,000 mobile phones that are probably mostly BYOD, but a mix of BYOD and corporate issued. And we can actually say, okay, these are similar and they do similar things, and we can kind of classify them as related to each other in that respect. So we had a scenario in the last couple of months where we started with this concept of, all right, we're going to look at similar mobile devices, right? And we started with this, and I think this was a large financial institution, if I remember correctly. So, very many people, and generally they keep themselves pretty locked down, and, they're pretty proud of what they can accomplish, and rightfully so. And so we started with this idea, let's look at mobile devices and figure out the similar ones. And from there, we said, okay, we see that this group of 100 are very similar, right? Okay, so we have that information. And now we have this way in our system where we can understand what are the things that make them most similar. And from there, we can actually say, all right, show me the things that are a little bit different but still really similar. And by doing that, we identified, I don't remember if it was a half a dozen or what exactly the number was, but half a dozen that were slightly different in such a way that the person that we were working with at the financial institution said, oh, I know what that is. That's actually a surveillance tool. And we know that's not okay. That's not corporate approved and all this stuff. And so we had actually found this essentially somebody listening, being able to listen into communications on other devices in the network in a way that was not at all allowed. So it was really just an interesting way to show something that is not easy to find in any other product, and we were able to do that pretty quickly.
Excellent. And are there any freezing shirtless?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are there any other story or any other customer success stories?
So I've got one other one. I kind of talked about a different one a little bit earlier, but I wanted to talk about one other one that I found to be really cool. So again, because of how we kind of correlate information and group up entities and identify devices and domains and all these other things, right? This was a bit ago, but we had a customer said, "Hey, I found this. You alerted to this typo squatting domain. And, I started looking into it, and I wanted to understand, like, how big of a deal is this?" And so we jumped on the system with them, and we discovered, okay, here's that typo squatting domain. So typo squatting, just for anybody who's not fully familiar, if you have google.com, it could be goggle.com. So they're just off by a little bit, right? And so they're trying to poach people who mistype or who don't read their hyperlinks carefully. But so we started with this, and you can in our system you can click on the domain and you can actually find out exactly who communicated with it and how much they've communicated with it, and we know the devices and we know the users and we know when it happened, and protocols and all these different things, right? So very easily we can just find this information. And so very quickly we identified, okay, here's the scope, here's how many people are affected. And from that kind of information on how much communication happened, we're actually able to figure out, okay, these people were actually successfully phished. They entered their credentials and now their accounts are compromised. But these other ones aren't. So you should, you know, send them a nasty gram, hey, you need to do better, or whatever your corporate culture is there. But the other people, you actually need to go reset their accounts right away. And from there, you know, that was already a huge win. It saved this person hours of time. But from there, we actually identified, just by looking at those devices and seeing how they were similar to each other within that certain period of time, we were able to identify that there were actually two or three other domains that were associated with this attack. And so these were things that they would have otherwise completely missed and that were completely under the radar and not reported anywhere else. And so we were able to find all these things in a couple of minutes. And this was something that that last step, I don't know how long it would have taken somebody to figure out.
Okay. Now, there are obviously thousands of, you know, cybersecurity vendors, startups, what have you, you know, in California, you know, on the East Coast, down south, and everywhere. What separates Awake from the other vendors? Why should a customer come to you say, hey, David, I want you to help me, versus the other 2,000 companies that are in existence?
Yeah. So the thing that I want to point out here first is with this concept of our entities, our devices, and our users and so on, we take pride in what we can give people context about automatically. And this is something that really helps people not to have to think about certain aspects that would have taken them a long time before. So that's one thing that I really, really like about our system. Just from a you know, starting and creation story, we were built by the security experts. We spent time as security experts and then really world-class data scientists and so on to build this really complete and really capable system that a lot of other companies, you know, they start with marketing, and that's how they drive their message. And understandably so, you need marketing to sell. But we actually started with the core technology and really built that out. And we spent a lot of time in the early days and still reaching out to security operations centers and asking people what their problems were, what their pain points were, how we could solve them. And so we took this step of building it and really thinking about the problem first and then marketing later, whereas a lot of other companies do it the other way around. And as I kind of mentioned a little bit before with our lack of interest in doing inline decryption, so many companies don't do decryption at this point, but some do. So I wanted to point out we focus more on user privacy, and we want to be a company that's privacy aware. We don't want to take your data off site. We don't want to do that. We want to do whatever is comfortable for you as an organization. So we're actually aware and care about your success and your users' privacy. And as I already mentioned, our culture. I think our culture is just the best thing. It's really, really amazing.
Well, that sounds great. I just want to ask you off the cuff here. Did you attend the RSA conference in California?
I didn't this year, but I do. I have attended in recent years. Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering, what is that like? I mean, does it give you a good different perspective on cybersecurity? Because I've had some contacts, I've gone down there, and they said that this year wasn't like maybe as great as some other years. I was just curious because, you know, we're talking about different vendors, so I thought of the RSA conference kind of popped up in my head.
Yeah, it's, I know it's, you know, it's this massive, massive trade show, and there's tons of different organizations that are talking about all sorts of different parts of security. And we felt like we had a really, really strong message this year that resonated well. And we talked about some of these things. We talked about how we try to drive you to answers right away. We don't try to waste your time in correlating things and figuring out the context behind things. And that seemed to really resonate well. And that's what we're delivering on. But yeah, it's easy to get lost in RSA and to there's a lot of Kool-Aid to drink and so on. But you've got to discern who is just marketing and who actually has the technical chops behind it.
Right. Okay. Now, do you offer any free trials or any free risk assessments for the prospects before you onboard them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have this process that we call a proof of value process, and we essentially allow any company to request a deployment of our technology in whatever format that they need. And we will work with you to provide, to show rather how Awake can actually provide value in an automated way, as well as for those who are more advanced for the perspective of using the query language or hunting, depending on what they're interested in. But we focus a lot of our time on showing how we automatically detect things for you. So we do that process, and that's a regular process with how we onboard new businesses.
Okay, excellent. Now let's just as we kind of come to the end of our show here, we just have a few more questions left. Let's just now segue into the overall cyber threat landscape. Not to get political in this question, I try to be apolitical as much as I can, but we keep hearing about nation-state threat actors, North Korea, China, Russia, and it seems like every day there's a news headline about China doing this, Russia doing that, Facebook doing something. I mean, there does not go a day without not hearing something about that. Just what are your thoughts on that? I mean, so you can speak as freely as you want. I mean, as a threat researcher, seriously, what do you think is going on? And I know it's a very huge macro question, but just whatever comes to your head, what do you feel about all this?
Yeah, so I'll kind of keep it relatively simple, if you will. You can, of course, take this question and spend days on it, but realistically, there's a lot of different motives for different attacks and so on. And one of the biggest reasons is you want to be able to steal data, whether that's intellectual property or currency or whatever. There's so many different ways that you can take this information and leverage it, whether it's to create industries back in your homeland or to support different groups that are against the beliefs of the country that you're against, and so on. But to not get political at all, the thing that I wanted to point out is I don't really think any particular industry is safe. And now if you think about, nation-state threat actors, big multinational companies, places that have a lot of resources or a lot of intellectual property, they of course make sense to be one of the more targeted things because they have so much of whatever that nation-state wants. And as I mentioned, I don't really think there's a particular industry that's safe. Industries exist because they make money, because they have some product or service that usually takes the form of intellectual property or an asset that they are selling. And so it makes sense that somebody would love to come in, scoop that up, and take it somewhere else and build it or use it for a smaller fraction. So, from that perspective, it's again minimum viable sophistication here, right? You just want to stay above whatever the thing is that is being successful by these groups. And in the case of nation state, it gets more complex, right? There are really some fantastically capable groups out there, but you still need to nail the basics, right? You really need to make sure that if it's different passwords, if it's not having things exposed to the internet that shouldn't be exposed, if it's multi-factor authentication, et cetera, just keeping, making it a bit harder, making them work more to compromise you, right? And from our perspective, we of course can help you find a lot of those different things, from anywhere from simple reuse of passwords all the way through really complex capabilities. And when we work with organizations that are worried about these threats, we really try to take a personal view and focus on what exactly they believe their threats to be, and help them to focus our platform and the capabilities on keeping them safe from that particular threat.
Okay. Now, what are your general expansion plans for Awake Security? I know you probably can't get into the specifics, but are you off, generally speaking, are you planning to offer new products, services, or enter new markets, perhaps?
Yeah, so I would say we're really always evaluating new markets, and right now we're at this point where we're really starting to grow and to have some success, and so that's something that you're definitely going to see more of Awake as the year continues and as the coming years continue. And I'd really just say that, you know, we're trying to build the market leader, right? We're trying to become the company to reckon with.
Okay. Now, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing in the coming years? And from your experience and knowledge, what do you think the biggest cyber threat will be? What's that one threat?
Yeah, so this is interesting. So the way the last handful of years has happened, it's just been really interesting, right? We have between security researchers who share proof of concept code that they create in security conferences and stuff like that, or you have people like Sandbox Escaper who publish fully ready to go exploits on the internet and all these different things. There's so much information out there that already exists that you just need to figure out how to use. And so it's cheap and easy. Easy is a gradient of a word in this case, but really something that a lot of different people, organizations, actors can use. Another thing is there are so many leaks, just whether you're talking about nation state level tools or you're talking about password databases and personal information that are all out there in the public, that it's really just difficult to keep oneself ahead of the curve here. And if you think about the password databases and personal information leaking, to take an ML opposition kind of view here, think about, you know, Google has this capability where you can complete emails as you're writing them based on predictive text and figuring out what you would likely say next. Why don't why don't attackers turn that around and leverage that to create phishing emails that are extraordinarily realistic and also leverage this information that they've pulled from different databases and have unmistakably real but also automated techniques to fish your people? And so these things definitely worry me. I mentioned my concept of minimum viable sophistication. So I think as people get more sophisticated on the whole and as attacks aren't succeeding, then you'll see the attackers continue to migrate towards more and more complete things that are more and more capable. But realistically, it'll really depend on how quickly two-factor authentication and other things like that are adopted. But the biggest cyber threat, so the interesting juxtaposition of you have the difficulty of keeping enterprises and all the different aspects of them secure. So whether it's cloud infrastructure or it's internal stuff or it's a user who brings in their own device and is now connected to the corporate network, that combined with this huge amount of information that exists in terms of nation-state tools and all these other kinds of technology that exists that are super destructive. Imagine, you have, if you think about it, you step back and you think nation-state actors generally aren't going to do anything really destructive unless they are ready to start a war. And this is my opinion, of course. But you wouldn't want to start a war with something that you're doing just flippantly. But you might expect that somebody who can access this, somebody who has less of a moral view of the world and really doesn't care, that could be somebody who could take this and very easily get a hold of it and not need a huge amount of technical skills and really cause some damage to, either if you think about an electrical grid or any other number of things. Somebody who just has the ability to access something and is ready to go with it, but really doesn't understand what they're really doing. Those things worry me the most.
Okay. Now, finally, our last question is, I get asked this a lot, and in turn, I ask this to all my podcast guests. What are those top two or three, five things, I don't know what your list is, that you tell people to protect themselves from being a victim of a cyber attack?
Yeah, so I think getting the basics right really, really is the most important thing. So use strong passwords. If it's a password manager, great. If that's the thing that you like to use, that's a really, really convenient and generally pretty strong way to keep yourself secure and to keep different passwords. And so that's potentially one way to really strengthen yourself there. Leverage the information that I think it's Have I Been Pwned. They have a great resource of information of databases of information that's leaked that has some of your information. Use that information and make sure that you're not using those passwords or those accounts or to change them and so on and so forth. And don't reuse those passwords. Two-factor or multi-factor authentication in general. Try to get those things and try to stay away from text-based things, which gets difficult when you have legacy vendors who only offer that. But I think as time continues, that will get better as well. And again, the minimum viable sophistication, just try to figure out what the thing is that you're most worried about, whether that's identity theft as a person or your intellectual property being stolen by a foreign government. Try to stay ahead of what you're aware of they're able to do. And the last thing, and this is more of an organizational thing, but also for your home network managers who really like to build an organization at home, attack yourself regularly. Try to break in and figure out where your weak points are. Whether that's a pen test that you're hiring out or whatever, and don't limit it to things that are in or out of scope. Of course, keep your organization able to function, but actually test the things that matter, not the things that check the boxes.
Well, are there tools? I've written articles on pen testing tools, but are there tools that the average American consumer can, pen testing tools, I mean, that they can download and easily do a pen test on their own home and the network in their own home? Are there tools available for that?
That's a great question. I honestly don't know the answer to that. For people who are more technically inclined, of course, there are things like Metasploit, but that is not a end user kind of
Right.
Useful utility. So I'm honestly not sure about that answer. That's a if somebody hasn't built that's a great service that should exist.
Well, hey, Dave, maybe you got a new service you can offer, right?
Yeah.
Maybe new product. There we go.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, David, thanks. Thank you for your time so much this afternoon, and we look forward to having you on future podcasts.
All right. Yeah. Well, again, it was a pleasure talking to you, and yeah, looking forward to what the future holds.
Right, take care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.